This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
I think it's safe to say Brian Koberger shocked everyone when he abruptly changed course the other day, pleading guilty to murdering four University of Idaho students, a startling twist in a case that's grappled the nation for almost 3 years now. But is this exactly what he wanted all along? Has Koberger been playing a twisted psychological game, orchestrating events to guarantee his own dark legacy? Today we're diving into these unsettling questions with retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, with years spent dissecting the behaviors of some of the most notorious offenders out there, I want to get your expertise in this and help us understand some of these motives, maybe, if we can understand them, whether he's deriving some satisfaction from the notoriety that he's gained through this guilty plea? Is he achieving the ultimate goal of infamy? Where do you think this is coming from here? This last, you know, very last minute, I did it thing.
I'm hard pressed to think. Again, we're always in a world of conjecture without the individual telling us themselves, but I'm hard pressed to think it was his idea. From the very get-go, Tony, when Ann Taylor got involved, his really skilled attorney, we saw right from the beginning she was doing all she could to save his life. As the case got more and more in-depth and more was revealed about the data points they have, the evidence they have, it became more and more of a lost cause to say that there's any chance he's innocent. Mm-hmm. And when you throw that on top of it started being leaked out how much the mother was playing a role in it as well about his innocence and being just involved, I think this was what she and Taylor was going for quite a while, and she got what she wanted. Koberger, I still hold to the fact that most people think too much about him. In a sense, there's not much going on. He is a raw animal looking for emotional response he's been craving his whole life because he never gets it. You know, people kept using terms, you know, you and I were talking beforehand, you know, I've been on the news a couple of times talking about this, and people keep using words like they ask, do you think he knows he's guilty or does he think he's guilty? Guilty is an emotion. Does he know he did it? Yes. That's a fact. Guilt's an emotion. Does he have remorse? Remorse is an emotion. He has zero effect in that courtroom because he has none. Another word that people are describing with him was he was controlling his emotions well. No, he wasn't. There's nothing to control. It was what you saw. Yeah, what you see is what you get with him. He's an empty shell that's constantly seeking more exploration of stimulus to make him feel alive. You know, and I'm sad to say this because I think it's going to cause at least half the family's a little pain. I want to talk about that too, about what a confession means versus a conviction psychologically. Hopefully it'll help. But I think he's looking forward to jail.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about all this.
It's new.
The phrase you use are exploration of stimulus to make him feel alive. Is that what you said, to make him feel alive?
Yeah,
because I was writing it down and then I went over to confession versus conviction too. There's a lot to unpack there, and I want to kind of start with it. I want to let's go to the beginning of one of the major points in the trial or in the trial in the hearing, right, where he confessed just the other day. When he stood up, that to me was a very interesting moment in it. Nor did he have to stand up other than to take the oath, which he wasn't even asked to do at that moment. He just kind of did it out of convenience because he stood up weirdly. It was a strange moment. Ann Taylor, after the judge addressed everything, she stood up properly, did her part. And the behavior of him at that moment was what I noted. If you watched him while Ann Taylor was giving her piece, he was really fidgety. He was like, he couldn't wait to stand up. He was just, it was like a kid in the classroom waiting to get his participation award because he was not good enough for anything else, but he was ready to get that participation award. And he was kind of getting up and it wasn't quite time. And then all of a sudden Taylor sat down and then he stood up. And he stood up at attention as well, the way he was standing there. And he looked so proud and he looked so like he just couldn't wait to say a word. And then he finally kind of got it in. And then the judge is like, you can sit down. Like, you don't need to like stand to address me. And Hippler almost, I think he initially took it as respect. I think it was this kind of him trying to emulate learned behavior. I think this is where I stand up. But at the same point, he was ready to bask. There was a basking look on that dead-eyed face of his. As much of a basking look as you can get from someone who appears to be a soulless human being. But I'd never seen him with such a look of, look at me. Look what I did. Did you get that? Or is that me just reading into this after obsessing over this for the last 3 years?
I think it's a little bit of all of it, yeah. Tony. I definitely think because he, again, undiagnosed by me or anyone else I saw, high on psychopathy, which means it's all about grandiosity. He doesn't have emotional responses. So him basking in the glory, maybe that's part of it. But also what these people do is they're chameleons and they want to become part of the environment to try to manipulate an environment to their gain. And so now that he's accepted, all right, I'm going to be all in on the rules, process, and procedures of being in prison. I want to do the best I can in that environment to try to master that environment. Kind of less, Lori Daybell Vallow is much more charismatic than he is, obviously. But I think the same attempt is going to be made to try to become part of that environment like great psychopaths do. The basking in it, I wouldn't use the word basking because, again, you're attributing an emotion. Yeah. I think he was getting something out of it, though. There's no doubt. And here's why. Because all the attention was on him. Again, let's think about grandiosity and the I did it moment where everyone in that courtroom, he's feeling that energy directed at him, good, bad, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. Some people do great things to bask in the glory of others. Some people do horrendous things to bask in the attention of others. And so it was that moment that all eyes were on him, that he's owning that behavior that he did. And so in his own unemotional way, I think he was trying to suck that dry, like you said, for any kind of stimulus he's getting out of it. That's why I think he's looking forward to prison because yeah. I don't think he had a thought of him getting out of this. But now that he's resigned to the next part of his life, I think he is still searching for what is going to let him feel alive, because I don't think he's found it yet. I think he got a glimmer of it with the murders, and that's why he took that selfie like he did, and that's why he was going to do it again.
I wonder if there's, I mean, again, this is just all conjecture, and people may look at this and go, ah, you're crazy. Like, we were reading way too much into it. No, I think you got to read into it, because
he's not telling you.
Because he's not telling us, and he ain't thinking like normal people do or healthy people do. So you got to try and get behind that prism and go, what's he seeing over here? Let me try and take a peek through that prism and see where things are landing and why he's acting the way that he does. But that's the strange part about the whole thing is we try to look at it from our conjecture and our prism and go, well, how would I feel if I was standing up? We wouldn't be here to begin with. We wouldn't be in this situation. So our brains would blow up. If we're like, suddenly you killed four people and now you're being, that's just not normal. But to him, it makes me wonder, is he living his best life right now? And that sounds like a crazy thing to say, but he has been such a failure in so many other aspects of his life. He tried to get into criminology. He tried to teach. He failed at that. He tried to study. I mean, his studies, he got pretty far in that. I'll give him that. But when it came to actually implementing any of the work or teaching others about the work or then kind of giving back out there, miserable failure. The students hated him, wasn't effective, got fired. It feels like maybe he's found his calling, and that's being this infamous character. And I think I think in a weird way he's resigned to it. But I think he's happy. I think he's found his purpose.
And that's what bothers me. I agree, and here's what I agree with. So let's put on our conjecture hat again. Howard Bloom came out with his possible theory a couple of weeks ago where he said he was doing all this to impress his professor. Mm-hmm. And we kind of took that and kind of ran with it a little bit further, a little bit differently, because I don't think he's trying to impress anyone. That's an emotion.
Yeah.
I think he was hoping to become, because he respects her a lot and she's so notoriety, again, grandiosity, that he would become a subject of her to teach, but still be on the lam. In other words, he would be co-teaching what he did with his idol. Yeah. I mean, I can really kind of see that playing out. So let's take that postulate of he wanted to impress and be studied by this great professor of serial killers. Mm-hmm. And what's the outcome going to be now? He is going to be studied by experts in serial killers, even though he was caught. Yeah. So I think his goal, because what's he been doing his entire life? So let's put on a humanistic side, and that is he's been trying, as many people that struggle with severe mental health issues do, they try to figure out why they are like they are. Mm-hmm. I think he's excited about the fact that he's now going to be studied and people are going to try to figure out why he is like he is. I think he's going to be extremely cooperative with people that want to interview and investigate him. Because he's trying to figure it out. That's my theory.
I agree with that. I mean, all along, I mean, from the very beginning, I think we hypothesized on the idea that, you know, did he do this to get on the ride, basically, to get on the horrible ride of murder and to experience what this is like? But what's the end goal? Was it to get caught? I think there might have been options there. And I don't think any of them were particularly of opposition to him. Again, my conjecture, I think the ideal goal might have been go do this, don't get caught, and then teach about it. And then and be this infamous person, but you're the only one who knows who you are. And then you can be the smartest person in the room because you can teach about it because you did it, but nobody knows that you did it. And you can be the one that has all these genius insights into this mind that can't be understood and can't be isn't found because nobody knows who he is or where he is, but you're the one giving it and no one's the wiser. Like, the joke's on you. I think that was probably the ultimate. But I think he was resigned to the secondary prize, which wasn't Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. It was getting caught and then being exactly what you talked about, being the one that gets studied. But also then being that figure that's going to get the letters, that's going to get the attention, that's going to have movies made about him. I mean, and there doesn't seem to be a way around this one where he's not essentially getting what he wants. I feel like the only way out of this one is him dying. So he's not there to enjoy it.
That's why two of the four families are distraught over the fact he's not getting death penalty, which he still wouldn't have died for a long time anyway. Yeah. It's the criminal justice system. I was thinking about this heavily last night. There is no justice that our current system has that can right this wrong.
No.
He wins.
Yeah,
he's on plan B, but plan B is exactly completely fine with him. And I don't think this was part of it. Again, I don't think he thinks as in depth about himself or I think he does. His ability to be self-aware enough in these areas. I think we are helping him think this through. I'm not helping him, but you see what I mean? I think we're on to something he was intuitively doing. We're giving him a little more credit, I think, for being proactively strategizing plan B. I think he recognized plan B as it materialized in the jail cell when they approached him with the plea agreement. Then all of a sudden his brain went to plan B, and all of a sudden we're saying, oh yeah, he's winning. Ann Taylor won because she saved his life, and he's winning because he's getting the life that he wants. He wants to be studied. In other words, he's not teaching about himself, but he's still going to be the subject of investigation.
I mean,
I hate that. Yeah. Doesn't that tear you up saying it?
Our justice system is not designed for a human being like this.
No.
It is designed to punish. It is designed to give the worst of the worst to the worst people out there. But it's twisted when the worst of the worst want what it offers. And that's what's happening here.
The families, I don't want to speak for the families at all, but again, in my trying my best to put myself in those shoes. They want, I would imagine they'd want him to suffer. They want him to feel remorse, pain, anguish, resentment that he's in prison arrested. All these emotions are what they want from him. And meanwhile, I think what he's, from what we're saying, man, he's gonna like it too much. It's horrible.
I agree. I feel like it's not, I mean, like I was very pro death on this one. Cause I just feel like,
unless I tell you, I heard he's going to be maximum security. You know, I think the only justice can be done, isolation supermax.
Yeah.
Because so Robert Hansen, the FBI spy, that was caught, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison in supermax. He got 1 hour of sunshine a day for his entire life. That's what Koberger should get. That's I don't know if they can impose that sentence on him, but the only justice to me is isolation, no outside contact. You die in a cell. That's completely it, because you can't give him what he wants.
I feel like, and that's, again, it's opposite land here with Koberger. At least in my opinion, yeah. It feels like it's like saying Dracula, you're gonna have to sleep in a casket. You're gonna be in this small room, and you get a casket, Dracula. That's all you get. Dracula's like, all right, this is great. I feel kind of like maybe this is like we're putting him in his natural environment. Like, I don't think he minds the isolation. I think he's made a lot of peace with that. But I mean, the level of isolation to which he's about to receive is beyond, I think, anyone's comprehension.
And what I mean by that too is, I think because the parents said, you know, him being able to breathe, him being able to interact with other people, him being able to then profit in any way whatsoever from what he did is just another stab wound to the families. And so being able to deny him all those things is what I would think, even though he still might be fine with isolation, all the things we're saying, being able to at least deny him those other things that would prevent more pain being inflicted on the victims.
It's interesting because Catherine, when she was talking with Brian Anton on News Nation the other night, and I'm not quoting directly here, but paraphrasing, she said something to the effect of, he has the intellectual capacity to reflect on his actions, and she's really curious to study him. She's open to going and trying to get behind this brain, because she believes, you know, from her own interactions with him when he was her student, that he is intelligent, that he can reflect on his own actions and doings. There's not the emoting complex necessary to it where he's going to necessarily feel appropriate emotions for what he's done, but it's just that cold, calculated, very mechanical way of reflecting. This is my conjecture here, where he can look back on it and maybe walk us through, kind of like in the Ed Kemper sort of way, or some of the other, you know, infamous serial killers that we've seen. My mind's going to like Mindhunter, and some of the examples that you know, that were written about in the book and demonstrated in the series, I could see him being one that just comes out, has a fairly calm conversation with somebody, seems like somewhat normal on the surface, until he just starts talking about how he decided to go butcher these kids up one day and talks about it like he's ordering a, you know, Arch Deluxe from McDonald's, even though they discontinued them 10 years ago.
You know, to the detriment of the family, I do think we can learn a lot from him, because he doesn't strike me as an individual like many of these psychopaths, serial killers that we've had in the past. He doesn't strike me as a deceptive individual.
Yeah.
In a sense of, I think he, because his level of no emotion is so low that, and remember, psychopathy doesn't indicate your level of intelligence either. He's extremely intelligent. In other words, we have no data points of deception with the exception of the fact that, you know, he was hiding that what he was doing here, but then ultimately he did confess.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting, I think, because he is a different nut. He's like he's what you picture when you picture a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the family's loss is tragic. I'm hoping we can learn enough to recognize earlier other Kohberger's if people are going in to study him, because I think there's a lot to learn.
What are we going to learn? I guess that is the big question. And I'm not a I'm not opposed to studying him. I'm not. I mean, as much as it's you're giving him what he wants,
but yeah,
are
I know.
We but are oh, we I doing it for the greater good? And I think, I mean, I if I was Steve Gonsalves, again, you'd have to like really be checking me for a plastic gun when it comes into, I think, going into that sentencing.
Wholeheartedly.
Because I'd be willing to go down for my kid and like ending this. But
you got to give it time, though, too. You know, you can't, you know, you got to let the victims take a breath.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't expect them to be.
Let the pain and suffering and isolation wear in for a couple of years and then start maybe.
I do not blame them for their reactions and being vehemently opposed to this. In the bigger 10,000 foot picture and having someone who doesn't have a child invested in this, whose life was taken, I don't know that I would have trusted a jury on this either. There's a lot of damning evidence here. A lot of it is circumstantial, but all you need, as we've seen in several cases in this last year, all you need is one. And it's not that you have one that's like out there being the, you know, the Dexter and they're fighting, you know, as a vigilante. They're just dumb. They're just misinformed. They're a low IQ. They have some sort of personal trauma or vendetta that they're going to project onto this case rather than actually look at the evidence. And they're going to, you know, they're going to say screw you to the system for their own personal stuff rather than the actual case that's going on. And that would have not been that crazy of a possibility here. So there was a very real possibility that Kohberger could have walked. And the fact that that now is completely out of the question, I think is a good thing.
I am 100% with that. And boy, I tell you, the dichotomy of joy and cringe on this was palpable with me as well, because I hear the families. I'm like, absolutely. He needs to go before the death penalty because they want the death penalty. And really, they should be the deciding factor. At the same time, I'm on the side also of there's no appeals. There's no jury. And Tony, here's one bit I alluded to at the very beginning, I think is really, really psychologically powerful. At least it would be for me. And it would be on all these other cases that you and I have covered. In every other case, especially if there's a murder case, and someone is being charged with murder and it goes through a jury and they're claiming they're innocent, even if the jury finds them guilty, there's a shred of doubt. You know, I mean, because the defense attorney's job is to sow doubt. Mm-hmm. And with a little bit of that doubt wheedle in, if they're claiming they're innocent, and even if they're convicted, was there someone else involved? Wasn't there? But when you have a confession, mm-hmm. I did it. There is no doubt.
Yeah.
It was him. I can have closure. There is no one else out there. There was no other conspiracy out there. It is him. Mm-hmm. The sentence is what is the, so I guess that's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, it's not the fact that he confessed. It's the fact that it's the sentence, which is not negotiable.
Yeah. Are you surprised at all that, he's writing the ticket. There's no coming back from this. He's down and out. There is behind bars and that's it. There's no possibility of parole. There's no appeals. There's nothing he can do. He will die in prison. Are you at all surprised that he was completely ready for this and just seems almost eager for this next chapter in his journey to start, or for someone who we have analyzed to kind of play the devil's advocate on this, why not go through the trial? Why not take that part of the ride? Why did he step off the ride right when we were getting to the very top of the roller coaster about to go down? We've been climbing this for 3 years. Why now? Why suddenly now go,
Is it the fear of death, or was it more of a fear of embarrassment and being called out on every single dumb thing that you've done in this case? And then let's dissect your childhood. Let's dissect your life, because that was going to come into play too. And then take another look at all of the dumb choices that you've made and all the failures that you have. It really makes me wonder, was it more so being humiliated publicly in front of the nation in a courtroom setting that he was more fearful of, or was it death?
I don't think that played into it for him. If I'm guessing, I think he was fine with either. I think he was going to enjoy the trial because mm-hmm. he's going to get to relive what he did. Because again, this is the fantasy aspect of why serial killers do what they do. I think that it probably had a large part to do with his attorney who wanted to save his life and his parents. I think, you know, as a mom and dad, they're probably, you know, I'd imagine pleading with him, just take the deal. Just take the deal. Just take the deal. Because at least we can still talk to you. At least we can still have contact with you. At least you can save us the money of all these appeals that we're going to have to go through. See what I mean? I think it's because he, for all that he has an ability to, he did have a relationship with his parents. His parents never abandoned him. His parents were always there for him. His parents were there during the worst times for him, especially his dad. I think, again, it's so hard to put myself in those shoes, that deep act of empathy that we talk about. But I think he probably did as much for them. If he's, I mean, it's probably the only selfless act he might have done is this one, is where he agreed to take the plea deal for his parents.
Makes you wonder, because it is the only, and granted, we have not had a great view of Koberger, meaning we haven't heard him speak much. I mean, this is like really the first time he's spoken. He stood silent, literally, at the initial plea hearing. This is the first time we've heard him say yes and no, but we don't have a lot of context to his personality other than those writings of his youth. And in those writings where he's talking about the visual snow, he does seem to recognize, and this seems more like from a learned behavior than it is a cognitive, I empathetically feel bad that I'm hurting my dad, but he did seem to recognize that he is hurtful to his father, and he doesn't know why he is, and doesn't seem to know how to control it or why he's doing it. So I wonder if that was part of it, of a, well, they're asking me to do this. They have done things for me. Maybe this is a fair exchange. You know, just a very mechanical way of looking at it. Not like a, let me not put them through this. They've been through enough already. Just a, well, they filled this jug for me. I'll fill that jug for them, because that seems to be the transactional way of doing things. It does make you wonder.
I think, I mean, the fact, again, I keep going back to the data points of the dad going driving cross country to pick up his son to drive him all the way back.
Yeah.
You know, right before they caught him. That's a relationship. You know, he didn't do it out of anger. He did it out of love. That father did it out of love.
No, completely.
And so whether Brian can reciprocate that emotion or not, he recognizes the emotion. That's why he wanted to be able to feel things, because he's seen other people have these things. Mm-hmm. And so whether he actually felt compassion towards his parents' request, if that, again, conjecture if it was a request or not, or they pressured him, he knew it would be good for them to take this. So I think that's why one of the reasons why it probably weighed in on him. And also Ann Taylor, she stood by with him. Oh my God. You know, and she, you know, I would imagine he can recognize healthy behaviors. He just can't have them.
Yeah.
Because of that lack of capacity. So when he recognizes people doing well on his behalf, like his professor, like his attorney, like his parents, he wants to reciprocate. And so that's why he comes across as mechanical, because he knows the actions he should take. I mean, we see this with psychopaths all the time. Yeah. They know the actions they should take. That's why they come across as creepy, because they don't feel emotionally the output they're giving you non-verbally and verbally. And so that incongruence makes them come across as creepy, like you've seen in the courtroom, because he should have an emotional reaction to the environment around him, but he's not. And so, because I would imagine he's recognizing what people are doing and showing compassion in his immediate family, and he's wanting to have the behaviors to reciprocate that. Wow, I'm jumping way out on limbs here on conjecture. Giving him a lot of credit.
That's what we did.
But maybe I shouldn't. But I, again, we're trying to figure out why he did these things. I'm thinking That's the most plausibility for me.
Yeah. No, I hear you. The control aspect of this, I want to say this before I go to control. Ann Taylor, I wonder how long she's known that he did this. I mean, not just like in her heart of just like, yeah, he definitely did this, but I, you know, I'm representing him. I have to do my job. Versus when he's actually admitting to it and saying it, that's gotta be, I don't know. I mean, you gotta have a certain personality to do that job, but that had to have been a weird moment when you go home at night and it's like, this guy that you've been fighting for all this time, as calculated as it was, he's just flat out coldly said, I did all of it. I killed every single one of them.
I'd be bathing in the courtroom.
What's that?
And they're sitting next to him. Literally saw that. So here's this cold-blooded killer that killed four teens, and they're sitting, and his two female attorneys and co-attorneys are sitting right next to him in that courtroom.
Bathing in
bleach.
Does
that not creep you out?
I mean, at night, that's a bathtub full of Purell. That would be, yeah. I mean, just the creepy level of that. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, again, it's people want to criticize defense attorneys, and I get it. But it is a good thing that they exist. We do need people to represent those that are not being represented, and not everybody is guilty. But this is truly, obviously, a case where he is. Control. How much do you think that calculated into this choice as well? Because it was fairly out of control for him. Everything he was trying to throw at the wall and stick did not. This is the first one where, okay, he's got control of everything, basically. It's done. He threw the towel in. Now he can go forward and be in control of certain things. Obviously not his freedom, but if somebody wants to study him, talk to him, yeah, he's going to get to go down that road. And putting him back in control, I wonder how much that of the emotions that he does have, control is likely one of them. And something that he certainly was not having any sort of grip on in recent years.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I agree. You know, regaining control of more of his life than he's had, probably definitely a motivation factor as well. That's why he seemed pretty comfortable yesterday with everything, because he felt, again, I think he always just likes to plan the path forward.
Yeah.
And he wasn't able to plan the path forward too much just because everything was in chaos, because he was in chaos. But now that it's got resolution and moving forward, you know, it's stabilized that crazy brain.
Pure speculation on this. Sentencing is going to be coming up. Check my notes. July 23rd and possibly the 24th at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. They have the extra day in there in case they need it for the victim impact statements. Do you think we're going to see a repeat of what we saw with Dennis Rader, considering the connections here? I mean, Catherine Ramsland, the one that wrote the book on him, now it looks like she's probably going to write the book on Koberger. That's my conjecture out of it. I would not be surprised at all. But BTK was one who, in his sentencing, at the very last minute, did the same thing, stood up and said, I did it. We don't have to do the trial now. And admitted, but then in sentencing, went through it. 45-minute recitation about everything that he did. Do you think we're going to see Koberger stand up and attempt to do that at the impact statements, or is this a different animal where he's going to cower and be very selective at where and how he shares his story?
Boy, that's a great unknown, Tony. I could see both. I really can. You know, he very much studied and emulated to different degrees people like BTK. So you're going to think he's going to want to do that, especially since BTK was so well interviewed after the fact in prison, in jail, like Koberger most likely wants to have happen. At the same time, though, you want to be able to control a lot. I mean, also, BTK had a lifespan of doing this, so he had a lot of things and details he could leak out over time and maintain control over a larger period of time, because his empire of killing was so vast.
Yeah.
Koberger's is very, very narrow, so he doesn't have a whole lot he can leak. So if he leaks it all at the sentencing, then he's got nothing left in the barrels, basically. He may say a little something to kind of whet the appetite and maintain control without losing his only reservoir of tools he has to maintain interest. Because remember, that's what these guys do. They want to maintain their own control over their own notoriety and grandiosity. So they're going to be very covetous of the leakage they give. BTK, again, being really, really good at doing just that and holding things in reserve. And when you have someone like Koberger, where you only got what, but I don't mean to diminish at all, where you have four murders, most likely not over a span of time. We're thinking wise, this is his first and only. He's going to be covetous of holding as much as he can in, I would think.
Yeah, and that's, do you think he's some, does he get joy out of, would he get joy out of telling the families exactly what he did? Because I don't, with BTK, I struggle with it. I don't know that Dennis Rader was getting joy out of torturing those families and telling what he did. I think it was more so, I'm proud of the length and the craft. And that's a really weird way of using the word, but the craft of what he did and was able to get away with it, because those were unsolved forever. This was solved. I mean, so there isn't like the revealing of everything. Other than you forgot a knife sheath. It's pretty clear what you did. You got a knife and you stabbed these kids and you forgot your sheath.
So again, it's really interesting. Whatever he does, he's not doing it to get at someone.
Yeah.
In other words, if all of a sudden he came out at the sentencing and did just that, and he gives a full, what we call it, a full Monty on talking about exactly what he did, why he did it, it wouldn't be out of vengeance towards the families or to get them. Because it's not about, everything's about him and his response. I would imagine if he did anything at all and gave any statement at all, it'd be him experimenting with, can this cause an emotional response in me? How do I feel when I do this? Does this make me feel better? Does I get, so in other words, it wouldn't be done to jab at them. It'd be done for his benefit in some way to maybe experiment with, does this work? Does this, because remember, that's what he's been doing. Is he's been experimenting his whole life.
Yeah.
This whole thing to me is one big experiment on, can I get an emotional response? He keeps dabbling in this. Let me try drugs. Let me try this. Let me do this. Let me murder a couple kids and see if that works.
Yeah.
And so everything comes down to him as an experiment for a reaction. And so if he does, it's not an intended for anything but himself.
If murder is what made him tick, what made him feel life, made him get some sort of emotion.
If it did,
let's say if it did, is Koberger a risk to the population in prison? If that's what gets him off, and I'm not speaking, maybe it is sexual, I don't know. Is that someone who obviously he has nothing to lose anymore? I mean, if killing is his thing, I don't know that I'd want to be in a cell with this guy.
That's interesting too, because you know he's got a history now of violence, up close and personal violence with a knife, so that clearly doesn't bother him. The lack of fellow prisoners to be able to read him is also going to be a challenge. But at the same time, though, he took the lives of kids, which, you know, I don't know if it, in the prison system, it puts you in the same light as a pedophile in a prison system. But I've heard some people comment on some social media streams that he won't last a month in jail before he's murdered.
I put a poll out, actually.
So now that to me, I'm not advocating anything illegal.
No, I'm not either, but I was curious.
You can imagine at least two families feeling really, really justified by that.
Oh, completely. Yeah. By the time this airs, the poll is probably going to have different numbers on it, but...
What's your poll say?
That was my question, because I made some choice comments about a broomstick the other day when I was referencing Dahmer and Koberger in the same sentence. And not endorsing it by any means, but, you know, I get the anger. What we're looking at here right now, how long until Koberger is removed from this planet through prison justice is the question that I posed.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Before New Year's, that is leading it 31.1% in a close second. 2027 and never are tied at 26.2%. 2026 is at 16.4%. So you're kind of in the area of it'll be a little bit to never, or it's going to happen right away.
I don't know. They could actually put him in isolation for his own protection,
which
too,
they probably will and probably need to do for several years.
I wonder if Vegas has odds on him yet.
Do they do that for like this sort of shit?
They do it for everything.
They got odds
they?
For everything. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, again, not endorsing that, but it is certainly the vileness of this crime.
I know two families who might be.
Yeah. I put some money down. I'd see if there's a, yeah.
This is the most heart. This is, you know, it's funny. I thought there'd be a feeling of relief when this one was done, but,
I don't know.
A lot of horrible emotions on this one.
I think one of the worst things is that picture, that thumbs up in the shower.
Oh,
it's real. It is. He did it. He took the picture for that reason. It's everything 100%. We speculated on is true.
Yep. 100%. And that's what he's reveling in.
He is. There's a lot more in this case. Of course, we'll continue to follow it. What do you guys think? Tell us in the comment section on YouTube if you've not done so already. If you're watching us on any of the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, wherever it may be sure to hit subscribe there. And then also please do check out YouTube and subscribe and let us know your thoughts on this case and the many that we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.